Okay, we're beginning here on the last line of Yud Gimel Amud Bet. Ha'u Arus Verusato, Da'ato de Kamei de Rav Yosef. These two individuals, halachically engaged, come before Rav Yosef. He amra minei. She says that it was from him. V'hu amar in minai. It was from him. So she claims that the Arus had bi'ah with her. The Arus agrees that he had bi'ah with her. So now, what's the safek? Amar Rav Yosef, amai nechushla. What's there to worry about here? We have everybody admitting to what happened. So then why should we have any other considerations? Chada, tahakamode. First of all, he agrees. I mean, the husband or the arus agrees that he was a party to this problem over here. Va'od, hamar Rav Yehuda amar Shmuel, halocha ki Rabban Gamliel. And va'od, we'll discuss in a second. There's another item here, which is Rav Yehuda amar Shmuel said, halocha is like Rabban Gamliel, who said that she is ne'emenet. That the woman has a nemanut in these cases, and therefore we should believe her. So over here, what are we to consider? Why should we worry about the woman or the baby over here? Because all the evidence points to the fact that this woman should be ksheira, and her baby should be ksheira. Now, the first issue with this Gemara over here is Tosfot raises it, but all the Rishonim raise it, is that there's a Gemara in Yevamot that we learned together, where we had a machloket between Rav and Shmuel, as to what is the default status of a woman who supposedly had bi'ah while she was an arusa, but claims it was her arus that did it. And there's also other rumors circulating. So over there, the Gemara has two lishonot as to what the default status is with the daimi mi'alma or the daimi bibalo. Are the rumors from someone else? Are the rumors that it came from her husband, that there was some sort of extramarital affair? And based on those two lishonot, the Rishonim try to figure out what's going on in this Gemara over here. Because we do not necessarily automatically assume that just because the husband here, the Arus, agrees that he had bi'ah with the Arusah, that doesn't mean that she hasn't had bi'ah with other parties as well. And that Gemara over there, he seems to suggest that just like she was mafkir atzma lebala, just like she let loose with her husband, she might have let loose with other men. So some Rishonim focus on the first Lashon over there, which says that there is no extrapolation. Just because she engaged in bi'ah with her husband doesn't mean that she would engage in bi'ah with anybody else. And therefore, this Gemara follows that position, the first Lashon in the Gemara in Yevamot, which says that husband is different. And therefore, we don't make extrapolations from her relationship with her husband to other parties and assume that there were other parties involved. So that's one way to deal with it. Other possibilities are that Tosafot spends time figuring out how it could fit in even into the second Lashon over there. Tosafot over here says that the husband agrees that he's not only had bi'ah with her once, but multiple times. And since he's had bi'ah with her multiple times, the overwhelming evidence is that whatever baby is born here is most likely from the husband, because they basically lived together while they were in Arus and Arusa. That's the equivalent of what happened over here. And so in all likelihood, if she is pregnant now or she has a child, the child is from the husband, because the majority of biot, even if we think she had biot with someone else, the majority of the biot still came from the husband, and therefore the baby should be ksheira. And there are others that suggest that the husband here says that after he had biot with her, he stayed with her. And therefore he has evidence of the fact that she never had any other biot. So one of those three approaches to dealing with the case or the framework of the case is mentioned amongst the Rishonim. Then we move on to the second thing, which is va'od. Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, lo chok ki Rabban Gamliel. What is the ode that is over here? So now, Tosafot first speaks about chada de kamode. Metzina lefereish d'ayir le'inyan olosra al arus. At first, Tosafot speculates, what is the question that they brought before Rav Yosef? What were they trying to clarify? They come before Rav Yosef, and she says, I had bi'ah with my fiance. He says, yes, I had bi'ah with her. And now, what are they asking Rav Yosef to say? What are they asking him to paskin about? So Tosfot at first says maybe they're asking him to determine whether they can stay together. And that's what the question is. But in the end, Tosfot says that it doesn't seem to be that that's the question over here. The question is not about staying with the Arusa, but rather, the question is the baby that's born now, if she gets pregnant or she's pregnant, what's the status of the baby? And that's the question at hand. Is the baby kasher? Because of the evidence that we have that it likely came from the two parties here. And therefore the baby should be kasher. But then what's the sequence of questions? Rav Yosef says, chadad de kamode. The husband agrees that he had bi'ah with her. So that's one reason to believe that the vlad is kasher. Vodam Rabbi Gamliel that she's ne'emenet. What do you mean she's ne'emenet? What does it have to do with the vlad? Right? She's ne'emenet about herself. She's not necessarily ne'emenet about the vlad. So Tosafot says over here, she's ne'emenet in a case where the husband is not present, or the husband doesn't disagree with her. So this is a very important factor because it's not agreed to by all the Rishonim. Tosafot believes that all the Mishnayot that we saw over here, Rabbi Gamliel says the woman is believed. In all those cases, it's either because we don't have the husband and we can't get the information from him, or the husband doesn't deny whatever she is saying. But if the husband was to be machish and he was to disagree with her, then she would not have ne'emanut in that case. He would be able to knock away or be machish or ne'emanut, which is that it's a bari versus a bari now, and the claim, her claim fails, because before we said the reason that she has a claim is because she's a bari and he's not. That's the view of Tosafot. There are other Rishonim that go through different stages of this. Some Rishonim believe that even in the case where he denies what she says, nevertheless, she's believed, but she's only believed vis-a-vis herself, not vis-a-vis the baby. Because he disagrees, and he has nemanut versus the baby, a father normally has nemanut to say whether the child is his or the ichus of the child, therefore the child will be a mamzer, because he's machish, the woman, but she will be fine. She will not be psula de kuna because she has nemanut to gabay herself. That's one way. Then you move on to the next string of Rishonim, who also think that not only is she ne'emenet the gabay herself, but she's also ne'emenet the gabay the baby. Because if we believe her that she's fine, then by definition, the baby as an extension should also be fine. And the husband's statement or the fact that he is machisher is not considered to be evidence against this. Mostly, the Sheif Shmait says the reason why is because the husband's claim over here is not really a definitive claim. Because you can only make a definitive claim about something that you know for certain, plus you're a nogei abadavar. So the gabei, he himself, he can make a claim that she had bia with someone else. Okay, so the gabei, in terms of himself, he's believed now to make her into a chaticha asura. So now he can't be together with her anymore. But the gabei, a third party, can have bia with her. What does he have anything to do with that? How can he make a bari claim about a third party that had bia with her when he has nothing to do with that? Now, you could say because he knows that Eden says, I never slept with her, so it's for sure from someone else. But again, over here, we have her bari claim that he slept with her, and then his claim that, no, I never had bia with her, but his claim is really identifying third parties and saying the baby is a mamzer. He doesn't have the power in that case to make a bari claim. His claim is a bari claim. The question is, does his bari matter? He is making a definitive claim. The question is, that does that carry weight now because of the nature of the bari claim that he's making? Is he really making a claim about himself, or is he trying to make claims about other parties? And maybe in that case, bari doesn't matter. Bari is only a claim about yourself. Well, you can make a definitive statement about yourself, then you can make such a claim. So maybe over here, there are Rishonim who believe that this woman is believed, even if the husband disagrees about herself, and about the vlad, and everybody is kshira over here. All right, so those are different stages, but really relate back to the Mishnayot. When Rabbi Gamliel says ne'emenet, the question always is, that's what the woman says. What does the man say? So here Tosafot makes it clear that it's only when the man does not disagree. But I mean, I just told you that there are other Rishonim that disagree with Tosafot and say even when the man disagrees, there are different levels of ne'emanut. Some believe she's believed, some believe she's believed about herself and the baby, and that there are different permutations of Rishonim who believe that what the husband's role is in all this party. But meantime, based on this, what Rav Yosef now says is, he's agreeing. We have a halacha like Rabban Gamliel that she's believed. So what's to worry about here? Everything should be fine. So Amar Leah Abaye. So now Abaye says to Rav Yosef, Abaye is a Talmud of Rav Yosef many times, reminding Rav Yosef of something or questioning Rav Yosef's position. Uvaha kilo mode mechashe Rabban Gamliel. V'amar Leah Shmuel Rav Yehuda shinana halacha Rabban Gamliel. V'at lo tavir uvda adikarov shiri metzla. So Rabbi says, okay, when you say v'akilo mode mechasher Rabbi Gamliel, don't you know that Rabbi Gamliel admits here that he is kasher? And then we said Shmuel says to Rabbi Yehuda, shinana. Shinana is a nickname for Rabbi Yehuda, which either means sharp teeth or very sharp one. Shinana, alocha Rabbi Gamliel, you're right. Alocha is like Rabbi Gamliel. V'at lo David uvdo, adigarov k'sheri metzla. But even though the alocha is like Rabbi Gamliel, only do it when you're mitzaref something else to it. What is that? You're mitzaref that they're rov ksherim here. I need something else. It's only bidiavad, basically, that we agree with this position of Rabbi Gamliel. Therefore, I'm going to look for something else to bolster that position of Rabbi Gamliel. Rabbi Gamliel, for whatever reason, says the woman is ne'emenet, either because we saw she migo, and therefore she's believed, or chazaka, she has a chezkat kashrut, and that's what makes her believable. What Shmuel says is, that's not enough. We want rov ksherim on top of that. Implying in that, v'hacha, rov psulim etzla. Over here, by definition, the rov of the world are psulim, because she is married to this arus, and therefore, anybody else besides the arus is pasul. So the rov of the world are psulim, because by definition, she's married, in a sense. She has arusin. And arusin makes everybody else on the outside. So now, by her, it's rov psulim, and now you want to paskin like Rabban Gamliel and say she's ne'emanet? Velita meich? Tikshelach hi gufa halacha? V'atlo tavid uvda? So, Rav Yossi says back to Abaye, why are you worried about my psak? Why don't you worry about what Shmuel said? Shmuel says the halacha is like Rabban Gamliel, but then don't act on that halacha. Elamayit l'chal meimar. What was Shmuel saying to Rav Yehuda in the end? Ha l'chadchilo hadiavad. That the question is, when we paskin like Rabban Gamliel, do we paskin l'chadchilo diavad? What Shmuel says to Rav Yehuda is, b'diavad we will follow the position of Rabban Gamliel. But the chadchilo, that's not going to be the position we take. So if a kohen comes to us beforehand and asks, can I marry this woman? We're going to tell him, no, don't marry this woman. If he already married the woman, and now he's coming to ask about the status of the child, we're going to say kasher. So that's b'diavad versus l'chadchila. So according to Shmuel, halacha is only b'diavad, like Rabban Gamliel. V'ha nami k'diavad tami. This case is also like b'diavad, because they're coming to us after the fact. Now, it's not so clear here why it's called b'diavad over here, because truthfully, they're coming to ask l'chadchila, what's the status of this baby? So vis-a-vis the baby, there's not really a question of bidiavad, it's a question of l'chadchila. And for the woman as well, it's only about her status in the future, which will matter, because if she wants to marry a kohen in the future, that will matter whether we believe her or don't believe over here. So in both of these cases, it seems like the question is a l'chadchila question, not a bidiavad question. The question seems to be here, l'chadchila, and not bidiavad. Because of that, the Rishonim suggest that over here it's already bidiavad, because the child, if we do not paskin on this child will be a mamzer. And that's a very serious issue. Child is a suffix mamzer, so not only are you making him masur lekal, you're also making him masur le mamzerim. And this child will not be able to get married. It'll put the child in a very difficult predicament, in a situation where the child will have no possibility of marrying, except for these outlandish cases where we can allow the mamzer to get married, where the people aren't asur bakal. So because of that, we consider it bidiavad, because of the circumstances that will result if we don't paskin. And that's what makes the case here bidiavad, is the severity of the outcome if we don't paskin. And so that's how the Rishonim explain why this case is bidiavad, even though if you're looking from the outside, it all looks like chatchila. You're asking me what the status of the baby is. You're asking me what this woman, can she marry a kohen in the future? Those are all the chatchila questions, not bidiavad questions. But because the status of this baby would be very, very difficult, in a position of a suffix mamzer, which is a terrible position to be in. I mean, as bad as mamzer is, suffix mamzer is even worse than just mamzer, because there you're precluded from anybody. And so because of that, they consider the case as if it is bidiavad, and that's why we're willing to paskin here like Rabban Gamliel to bolster the position that, number one, the arus is agreeing, and number two is she's ne'emanet. So between the two of those items, we're going to say that the child is kasher, and the woman herself will also be considered to be kshera in this case, because we deem the case to be bidiavad. Even though you could argue, you could bifurcate the case, and the paskin versus about the child, and not about the woman, or vice versa, say that the woman is bidiavad, because she's going to be forced to leave her husband, whereas by the child, it's a case of lechatchila, and therefore we will not paskin about the child. There are Rishonim who suggest it, but the Ritva and the Sheif Shmaitato explain that we want a consistency in the psak. It's very difficult. If you are posel the woman and not the baby, then for the husband, he's going to be left in a difficult position where he libo nokfo, and we don't, your people are going to say, really, the child's kosher, but his mother's a psula. So in order to make it that the psak is binding, a lot of you shouldn't believe that we have to be consistent between the two positions. Otherwise, you will not get the result that you want, which is that the baby be kosher. Ramile Abaye Lurovo. So Abaye challenged Rovo over here at Girsa Rabo. Umi Amar Rabbi Yeshua Eina Ne'emanet. Does Rabbi Yeshua really believe that the woman is not believed in these cases? V'Reminu, we have other places where Ehid Rabbi Yeshua, V'Rabbi Yehuda ben Betero, Mishnah Nediot, Al Amanat Isa Shehi Ksheira LeKuhuna. That an Amanat Isa is Ksheira LeKuhuna. Now, Amanat Isa is very controversial over here. I will say that Tosafot even thinks the Girsa is wrong, and the word Almanah should be dropped from the Girsa. That we're not talking about an Almanat Isa, we're talking about an Isa, period. Let's assume now that an Isa is dough. Dough means something that's mixed up. The mix-up here is somebody who is psula lakuna. There's some question about these individuals that makes them a psul lakuna, which usually would involve a psul halal. We'll get back to it in a second. I'll come back and explain all of this. Now, we have a safek here, where there's an Almanat Isa. According to Rashi, we're talking about an Almanat Isa as a widow. She was married to an Isa, someone who was a safek psul lakuna. Now, she is therefore a safek psula lakuna after she's been married to this individual. He dies. Now, we don't know if she's psula lakuna or not. If she had bia with him and he was psula lakuna, then she is a surah lakuna. If he wasn't, he was kasher lakuna, then she also remains kshira lakuna. So that's the question over here. Rabbi Yeshua over there says kshira lakuna. There we have a safek. Say kshira lakuna. Amalei ha'achi ashta. How can you compare the cases? Hotam isha niseit bodeket. It's a very clear distinction. A woman who gets married checks into the yichus of the family. And therefore, we can lie on her and say that isha niseit bodeket v'niseit. She checked and then she got married. So even though for us it's a safek, she looked into the family and clarified that he wasn't a safek halal or safek pasul dekuna. Hocha isha mizana bodeket mizana. She is having bia, she's having znut. She's going to go and check who she's having znut with. By definition, znut is already something that is outside of the bounds. So you think once she's being outside the bounds, she's going to be makpid on who she has znut with. Now we saw before that the Chachamim have that position. That is the case. That they believe that a woman who is mizana makes sure that she gets a high class znut and doesn't consort with people who are psulim. On the other hand, Rabbi Yeshua's position is that that's not the case. And when a woman is mizana, she either doesn't have the time to check, because it's usually something that's driven by impulse, and therefore there's no checking into the situation, it happens too fast, and therefore she's not able to check into it. Or by definition that we're dealing with znut, znut already deals with shady characters, so there's a likelihood that we're dealing with people that have shady yichus as well. What are the cases of Rabbi Shua? All the Mishnayot that we saw, Rabbi Shua says, any minute, all those cases involve possibilities of znut, or claims that the woman had znut. In that case, Rabbi Shua says she does not have this chazaka that she checked in to whoever she engaged with to say that it was fine. Over here, Almanat Isa, on the other hand, she looked into the matter. She married the man. She looked into the matter. So Amarova, Rabbi Yeshua kasha, Durgamlio lo kasha. You're only bringing a stira within the position of Rabbi Yeshua, not within the position of Rabbi Gamlio. Vaktani Seifa. Why don't you read the rest of that Mishnah? The rest of the Mishnah says, Amarlein Rabbi Gamlio, kibalnu edutchem. Wait a minute. Okay, we understand your testimony. We hear your testimony, yet we can't do anything about it because we already have a gzeira from Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai that we don't put dinim together to do this. The Kohanim listen when it comes to making people more pasul. I mean, they're machmir, but they're not willing to be mekil. So over here, where you want to be mekil, which is basically you want to come along and say that Almanat Isa would be kshira lekuna, that's something that would make them muteret or make people more muteret lekuna. The Kohanim will not listen in that case. The Kohanim are makbid on their yichus, and if you want to be machmir, they'll listen to you all day. You want to be mekil, they're not going to listen. And so Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was gozer that we don't set up batei dinim, make things more mutar, only to make them more asur, because in the end, the Kohanim are only going to listen to you if you make it more asur, not if you make it more mutar. So despite the fact that you might be right, we're not going to paskin that way. So you see over here that Rabbi Gamliel says, ain't an emenet. She's not believed in this case. El Amarovo, Rabbi Gamliel kasho. The reason that it's different from Rabbi Gamliel is, hotam bari, hachashema. The reason by our Mishnayot that Rabbi Gamliel says emenet in all these cases is because there's a bari claim over here. There's a definitive claim in all these cases where she says, I know for sure. She's making a statement. Over there, there's no way she can know better than us. As definitive as a claim she wants, there's a safek involved here. How would she know, or how would she have the information to tell us that this guy is not an Isa? There's no way she could clarify this information. I mean, Rashi speculates about a case where she could clarify, but it seems very unlikely that she's able to clarify this case, and therefore she knows no better than us. For her to make a definitive statement that she is Almanat Isa and I'm fine, there's no way she can make a definitive claim. She just doesn't have the information to make it. As definitive a claim she makes, we know that she doesn't have the information to do it, and therefore Rabbi Gamliel says, no good. Now what about Rabbi Yeshua? If that's the case, why does Rabbi Yeshua believe in Amanat Yisrael? We believe her by the case of our Mishnah, we don't believe her. Rabbi Yeshua, but Yeshua, Amanat Lo Kasha. Over there, it's also another question. Hotam Chad Sfeika. Bar Mishnayot, there's only one Safek. In the case, it's by our Mishnayot. Whether Safek Nivalah L'Kasher, Safek Nivalah L'Fsul. The only question we had over there was, did she have Biyah with someone who was Kasher? Did she have Biyah and someone who was Pasul? That's the only question at hand. That's one Safek. Over there, Rabbi Yeshua says, in a minute. Hotam Chad Sfeika. It's a fake fake over here, according to Rabbi Yeshua. Hilkach. From this, you would conclude. L'Rabban Gamliel, Alim Le Bari. Bari is so strong, that Afilu B'chad Sfeika Nami Machshir. Even with one Safek, he is also Machshir. Meaning that, even though our Mishnayot are dealing with cases of one Safek, he says Bari is enough to overcome that problem and say Bari dictates. And we believe the woman. Vikile Shema. And Shema, having a non-definitive claim, is so weak that filu b'sfeik sfeika nami posel, that even the case of a manat isa, where there's a sfeik sfeika, when she comes in with a shema claim, that's not enough. So for Rabbi Gamliel, bari and shema are the linchpins in deciding whether she's nemenet or not. If she makes a bari claim, done. Doesn't matter whether it's one sfeik, two sfeiko. She makes a shema claim, even in the face of a sfeik sfeika, where we should be makil, he says no go. Because shema is just not enough to get us there. That's where Rabbi Gamliel's position is, even though it's not so clear here that Rabbi Gamliel's position is simply Bari, because we saw before that in Rabbi Gamliel's position, we believe not only is it Bari, but it also involves either Chazak or Migal. So there are other things that are bolstering his Bari over here. It's not a simple Bari. On the other hand, for Rabbi Yeshua, the Rabbi Yeshua Limle Chad Sfeika, one Safek is so strong, that Afilu B'Bari Nami Posil, that the fact that one Safek makes you Asur, or we're not Ne'emenet, the woman's not believed, that's even in the face of her Bari claim. He's willing to say that one Safek is so powerful, that to the negative side, that even if she makes a Bari claim, it's not enough. And even though our Mishnayot that we've seen until now look like a Sfeik Sfeika, because all the Mishnayot, we discussed the fact that there's a possibility here when she's secluded with this individual. Did she have Biyah? And if she did have Biyah, did she have Biyah with a Pasula? So what Rashi says over here is that Rabbi Yoshua believes in Apitropos Le'arayot, and therefore once there's Yichud or seclusion, we can automatically assume that there is Arayot over here. And there is no Safek left as to the question whether it was or wasn't Biyah. There definitely was Biyah, and therefore there's only one Safek left. Vikile Sfeik Sveika. On the other hand, Sfeik Sveika is so to the coolest eye, that filu b'shema nami makshir. Even if she makes a claim that is not definitive, we're going to believe her because Sfeik Sveika is in her favor. Now this might go back to what we spoke about earlier, the nature of Sfeik Sveika. What is a Sfeik Sveika? Clearly over here, Rabban Gamliel believes that a Sfeik Sveika, there's still a Safek involved. The question is, how do we deal with that Safek? What Rabban Gamliel says is that Shema will not overcome this Safek that remains in a Sfeik Sveika. What you could say for Rabbi Yeshua is that Sfeik Sveika, we mentioned before this possibility that Rav Soloveitchik always liked to say was that when you have a Sfeik Sveika, it wasn't even a Leidata Safek. When you're a Sfeik Sveika, there's no more Safek anymore. Therefore, a Shema claim is enough to override and to win the day over here because there's nothing on the other side. Sfeik Sveika means we're not the Safek anymore. And as long as she makes some claim that will get her through, she is believed. So that is how we define the positions of Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Yeshua. Rabbi Yeshua, his linchpin is Safek versus Sfeik Sveika. And for Rabbi Gamliel, the linchpin is Bari versus Shema. And to the point where the other side won't matter. Rabbi Gamliel's Bari won't matter whether it's Safek or Sfeik Sveika. And his Shema also won't matter whether it's a Safek or Sfeik Sveika. And the other way around for Rabbi Yeshua, that his Safek and Sfeik Sveika are so powerful, it doesn't matter whether it's Bari or Shema. Safek will override Bari. And Sfeik Sveika, even a Shema, will be good enough to get through. So that's the outline of their positions. Now, the Gemara is going to bring Tanu Rabbanan, Ezu Amanat Isa. What is an Amanat Isa? Again, Tosfot over here wants to eliminate the Amanah from the Girsa and say that we're talking about an Isa. There are three different explanations that are given to what this Isa is over here. The Isa is a dough because something got mixed up. That's definitely what happened over here. We also know some other information, which is the Gemara just told us the case of Amanat Isa is a Sfeik Sveika. Those are the two pieces of information that we know. So Isa is usually about a Psul Kehuna that got mixed up. And number two is, the Gemara already told us, the case was a case of Sfeik Sveika. So Rashi brings his first interpretation. The first interpretation is a case where a husband was married to a woman. He throws her a get. Sfeik Karov Lo, Sfeik Karov La. Throws a get. We're not certain as to whether the get landed closer to her closer to him. They were 8 amot apart. If it falls closer to him, it's not a get. Falls closer to her, it is a get. Then he dies. And now this woman goes ahead and marries a Kohen. And when she marries a Kohen, she's for sure not married anymore. Her husband's dead. So we know that. But why is she not married anymore? Is she not married anymore because her husband passed away? And that's why she was an almanah. And when she married the Kohen, it was fine. Or is she not married anymore because the gerushin, the get that he went through to her, was a good get, and she's really a grusha? Obviously, it happened before he died, because he threw her the get, but then she's a grusha, and she psula the kuhuna. So now when she marries this kohen, it's a safek whether she's a grusha, safek almana. And then the baby born from that is a safek halal, safek lo halal. So that's what Rashi says in the first case. He brings down. Case is a case where after she gets married, it has a ben that is a safek halal, and that's what we're dealing over here. That's the case of almanat isa. Now Rashi says that, but then when he comes down to the case of sfek sfeka, he says, "What sfek sfeka is there over here? There's only one safek over here. The safek is whether she was divorced or she was widowed. That's the only safek in this whole lineage here. There's only one safek, which is divorced or widowed." Rashi comes along and says, "Vizu shemba machmat bina korila sfek sfeka." Because the question is arising about the son, he calls it a sfek sfeka. That even though it's not a real sfek sfeka, a sfek sfeka is where you have a decision tree. Say A or B, and then if B happens, C or D could be possible. That's a sfek sfeka. That's not what's happening over here. All they're saying, the sfek is at the level of the mother, and now you're asking about the child. So it's a sfek sfeka, but not in the traditional sense of a sfek sfeka, where these are two sfeikot built on each other. I mean, probability tree. That's not what's happening over here. The sfeika is just simply that we're not asking about the mother, we're asking about the child. It's either halal or a kohen. So there's only one sfeik here, but we're calling it to be similar to a sfeika. Obviously, that's very difficult, because the Gemara seems to indicate here a sfeika is literally a sfeika, and it makes a big difference. Therefore, Rashi brings another pshat from his Rebbe. He says, "Umidivrei Rabbi Yosef tuv elem matzati." He says that this is the case. That the almanat isha is a case like this. Isha sheya bala sfek sfeka. Kagon. Shinit garsha imo mi bala rishon. Sfek karovlo, sfek karovlo, umate. Same story that we had before. But then, umate betoch shlosha chodashim niseit kohen. Instead of waiting the requisite 3 months, she gets married within 3 months of the death of her husband. So now you have a sfek sfeka. Because the sfek sfeka over here, you have one sfek which relates to whether she was divorced or widowed. There's a second safek, which is, who is the father of the child? Is the father of the child the first husband, and then it's irrelevant? Or is he the son of the second child, and then the safek of grusha or amana comes up? Safek ben tisha l'rishon v'kasher, v'alhita migureshet, he called him the get nitabra. We're assuming here that she got pregnant before the get was given, because even if she's divorced from her own husband, she can't be returned, then she's a problem of grusha. So you have to assume that she was impregnated before the get was given, and he died really right after he gave the get. So over there, there's a safek if it's from the first one, kasher, safek from the second one. Even if it is from the second one, then they safek whether she is grusha or almana, and therefore whether it's a safek halal or kohen. So now you really have a sfek sfeka. And that's why you call it an isa, sheish ba eruvei sfekot. There are multiple sfekot over here, and that's why it's called an isa. It's mixed up. And that's what the sfekot over here, and that's how Rashi defines it. Now, there is a slight problem with Rashi, which has to do with the nature of sfek sfeka. The question of sfek sfeka is built, according to some Rishonim, on a decision tree, which is A or B. And if B, then the probability is within B of something happening. Over here, the sfekot are independent. It happens to be that they will come through a decision tree, but the sfekot are completely independent. The fact, whether the baby is from the first husband or the second husband, has nothing to do whether she was divorced or widowed. The sfeikot are completely independent, have nothing to do with each other. Now, it's true within a decision tree, you could say, either from the first husband, second husband. Even from the second husband, was she divorced or widowed? So in terms of a decision tree, it would fall under one of the parties, and it would be a dropped decision tree. But, on the other hand, the sfeikot are independent. You could have either question independent of the other question. One does not precipitate the other question. And therefore, there are some Rishonim that believe that that's not called the sfeik sfeika, because one does not influence the other. Alright, that just to keep in the back of your mind. Obviously, Rashi believes that it is a sfek sfeka. Tosafot comes in and says that's definitely not what the story is over here. And Tosafot has a different shot that many of their other Rishonim take up, which is Isa literally means mixed up in a dough. Mixed up in a dough is that unidentifiable. That means that we either have a family or we have a city in which there are sfekot or safek halalim nimsaim there. And the sfek sfeka is that we know there are chalalim in this group. We just don't know who they are. So, but even the ones that we know, they're also sfeikot. So it's something like a case here where a woman got divorced or amana, had babies, got mixed up in the family. Nobody knows anything. Or a possibility that you had two ladies who mixed up their children at birth. Make all sorts of questions like that, where you have a question in general about a safek halal or kohen. Then, on top of that, we don't know who the party is. We don't know who the individual is. So now, if you marry someone from this family, or you marry someone from this city, you're faced with a safek sfeika. One safek is this the individual who the safek is about? Or is this individual have nothing to do with the safek? Even if this individual is the one that the safek is about, they're also a safek, because it was a question about whether they really were a halal or a kohen. So that's how Tosafot defines it over here. Now, because of that, Tosafot says it has nothing to do with an almanah. The way that we have it in Girsan Arz, it's almanat isa, which means it's all about a widow. That's why Rashi keeps coming up with cases with widows, because the Gemara says here almanat isa. The Rabbeinu Tam erases it from the Girsa, he shows in the Tosefta and the other Gemarot and the Yerushalmi that the word almanat does not appear, and therefore the case simply is isa. Isa is an individual who comes from a mixed background, which means that we have a family, a city, where there are these safek chlalalim rolling around. So each person is a safek safek. Are you this person that the safek is about? And even if you are that person, safek whether you are a halal or a kohen, even with that. And that's the safek safek that Tosfot says is being dealt with in all these cases over here. All right, so now, Tanu Rabbanan, Izu amanat isa. What's the case of amanat isa? Koshein ba lo mishum mamzerut. This person doesn't have a question about mamzerut, which is a psula kahal. Doesn't have a question about nitinut, natin, which is also a question of the kahal, not the kuna. And also doesn't have a problem with avdei melachim. We saw this back in Yevamot. Avdei melachim were the strong men of Shlomo Melech, who avadim, who basically, because they were so powerful, acted like they were free men. Or the women married them because they were so powerful, but they really were non-Jews. And therefore, the children born of those marriages are either not Jewish or mamzerim, depending what you think the union of a Jew and a non-Jew produces. But therefore, this person, this amanat isa, or isa, depending on what you think the gear says, is a product where mamzerot's not an issue, nitinut's not an issue, avadim are not an issue. So what is the issue? It must be that we're talking about a kahuna issue. It's a halal issue. And that's the only issue that's here. And Tosafot points out over here, why don't they mention amoni or malvi or mitri or nedomi? Is because by ammonia malvi, it's low psika milktal, because it'll depend whether they're a male or a female. And by the case of Mitzri and Adomi, after three generations, they're kasher levodakal. So there would be a much more nuanced statement about their responses, whether they're pasul or not pasul. So therefore, the Braita doesn't address those issues, even though those are obviously psulim the kahal, but they are either limited or they have a distinction between males and females. And therefore, the Braita doesn't get involved in those situations. Amar Rabbi Meir, Shamati, I heard, Kol she'en ba achad mikol elu mesi'en l'kuhuna. Anybody who doesn't have any of these items associated with it, then she is k'shera to marry the kuhuna. Obviously, we have to explain this, because just because she's not a mamzera, or she's not a netina, or she's not a shifcha, doesn't necessarily make her k'shera the kuhuna. There are other things that can make her psula the kuhuna. Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, Amar Mishum Rabbi Meir, two statements here that are saying something similar in the name of Rabbi Meir. They disagree with the Tana Kama's version of Rabbi Meir, and they say this, that Ezu Amanatisa, Koshnitma Bas Safek Chalal. Anything where a Safek Chalal got mixed up. Makirim Yisrael Mamzerim Shvenehem. The Jews recognize or know the Mamzerim amongst them. But they do not recognize the chalalim, meaning that chalalim get disappeared. They don't stand out, and therefore they disappear into the woodwork, and then we don't know where they are, or we don't know who they are. On the other hand, mamzerim are tagged, like a scarlet letter, and therefore they're known for sure to be mamzerim, and we don't have to worry about it. Now, obviously a lot of this is cryptic, and the Gemaras want to know. We now here have three opinions within this braita that we just quoted. We have Tana Kama. We have Rabbi Meir according to the Tana Kama, and then Rabbi Meir according to Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar. So they have three opinions. What are they arguing about, and what are their opinions about? That's what the Gemara is going to dissect now. Amamar, Ezu amanat isa, kol she'en ba lo mishum mamzeru, v'lo mishum nitinu, v'lo mishum avdei melachim, ha-chalal, kasher. And if she's a halal, he's kasher. Maishna hanach deoraita. What's the difference between all these other psulim that are psulim min haTorah? Halal nami deoraita. Halal is also a psul midoraita. So why should halal be overlooked over here? Number one. V'tu, Amar Rabbi Meir, Shemati Koshim Be'achad Me'elu Mesin Lekuna, Hainu Tanakama. If that's the case, Rabbi Meir and the Tanakama are no different. They're both basically saying that these psulim cause a problem, but if she have a psul of halal, she can marry a Kohen, and no problem. That's what Tanakama is saying, that's what Rabbi Meir is saying. What's the difference between them? V'tu, and on top of that, Mishim Elazar Omer Mishim Rabbi Meir, V'chen Ayer Rabbi Shimon Menasi Omer Kedvarav, Ezehui Almanat Isa, Koshinit ba basafek halal. So makirim yisrael mamzerim shuneim, and makirim chalalim shuneim. V'amart reisha halal kasher. You just said before halal is a kasher. Now all of a sudden you want to make a halal pasul. What's going on over here? So Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan for here defines for us what is going on. Mamzeret soveach v'halal shotek igabenayu. The difference here has to be how we view the response of the individual who is either accused or maligned in some way to say that they are a mamzer or a halal. And the difference will be here, somebody who shouts that he's not a mamzer, or somebody who walks away when someone calls him a halal. And the question is, do you have to fight against these types of claims? If someone comes and casts aspersions on the yichus of an individual, what is the response of that individual? And does that response tell us something about them? That's what Rabbi Yochanan says is the difference over here. Tana Kama Sover. Kol pasul, the korilei v'shotik, pasul. The Tanakama believes, the Tanakama being the first statement that we had in the Braita, any pasul that you call it, that person a pasul, v'shotik, and he's silent, pasul. Shtika geoda. If he's silent, silence is acquiescence, and that means that if he is maligned in some way, or the aspersions are cast about his ichus, and he doesn't respond, that basically means he agrees. He knows that's the truth. He wants to keep it quiet, but the fact that he didn't respond means pasul. So that's Tanakama. Then, Vahachi Kamar Tanakama. Ezu Almanat Isa, Koshein Ba Lo Shtok Mamzerut, someone who wasn't silent when they called him a Mamzer. Velo Shtok Nitinot, that he wasn't silent when they called him a Natin. Velo Shtok Abdei Melachim, and he wasn't silent when they called him Abnei Achim. Velo Shtok Chalal. And also by a Chalal is the same thing, that he wasn't silent when they called him a Chalal. He has to respond. He didn't mention all of them, he mentioned a couple of them, but he meant anything. Any time where there's no response from the accused party, or here really the maligned party, then we assume whatever we said is right. The rumors are correct. So that means what the Tanakama basically says is silence is acquiescence. And anytime we're faced with a party who is being, person's cast about his ichus, then we believe them until he opens his mouth and says no. But if he doesn't say anything, we're going to believe them. As Rashi points out over here, in a case where we know that it was an Eshet Safek Chalal, that we know the Sveiko, and then he was divorced, he's Imo Misafek, over there, we would believe him, or we would be machshir l'kuna in that case. But the cases over here are cases where we don't know. And then we make accusations, and then the person is silent. Over there, they will be pasul, because they're not responding to the accusations. But in a case where it's well known, or the safek is well known, over there, then he doesn't have to respond because we know the information. Everybody is well versed in what the issue is over here. And those sfekot, beishet safek halal, shenemekimet sfekot, shenit kashayimo, misafek, they will be machshir in that case. V'kamalei Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir says that's not the case. Hanachu dekol posilei bekal. Those things that make him pasul dekal. Mamzer, notin, eved melachim. These are things that are going to ruin this person's life forever because they won't be able to marry a Jew anymore. This will push them outside of Kal Yisrael. Then, if they're silent, you're right. If they are silent in the face of such an accusation, there's something seriously wrong. Because this is going to push this person out of the Gaal, and if he's not willing to say something, then we got to believe it's right. But when they're silent with regards to a halal, they are kasher. Over there, there's a reason to believe that they will be silent because he says, because why is he silent? Because he doesn't care. Why doesn't he care over here? Why is it lo ichpatle over here? So la mishum de odi. It's not because he's admitting, la mishum de lo ichpatle. Hovalab sulakalahu. The reason he doesn't say anything is because it could be much worse. If they called him a mamzer, then he'd be out the gamre. When they call him a halal, the only thing that does for him is makes him pasul de kuna. So therefore he says, you know what? I'm just going to keep quiet. So let me just keep quiet because whatever they've said now is not so bad. So that's what Rabbi Meir says, according to the way that Tanakama is reading Rabbi Meir. Tanakama says silence is acquiescence. Rabbi Meir says, I agree with you. Silence is acquiescence, where the silence really leaves the person in a terrible position, which is that they're outside the cow. But where the silence leaves the person in a okay position, then that silence is not necessarily acquiescence. The reason that they're not saying anything is because it's not important enough for them to speak up over here. And that's why they're kishira de kuna. They're basically saying that, look, even if people believe them, the worst that it's going to be is that I can't marry a kohen. That doesn't mean it's true. It doesn't mean that his silence is acquiescence. His silence is simply that it's just not worth a fight. Because even if I fight here, it's going to go through all this trouble, and who knows if I'll win. And even if I win, all it does is let me marry kohenim. I don't need to marry a kohen. I don't need to marry someone that's going to be kosher laguna. That's not my issue, so I'll let it go. But his silence cannot be read as acquiescence anymore. His silence is simply, it's just not worth the fight. In the other cases, the silence is acquiescence because it's worth the fight. If he doesn't fight, he's out. He can't marry anybody. That's a serious accusation, and there he needs to fight it. So that's the way that Rabbi Meir learns it. Then along comes, B'kamarlei Rabbi Shimon Lazar the Tanakama, the Rabbi Meir. Ish mi'alach, the makshir Rabbi Meir b'shtika. The case where Rabbi Meir says shtika is not considered to be acquiescence. Lo dekarlei halal b'shatik. That's not in the case where they call him a halal and he's silent. And dekarlei mamzer b'shatik. Says just the opposite. V'hai deshakik savar mamzer kola idlei. The reason that by silence by a mamzer is not acquiescence is because of that statement at the end of the braita, which is, everybody knows who mamzerim are. Mamzerim have a call. People track mamzerim. They have like bracelets, they have a scarlet letter, whatever it is that they do, that everybody knows who a mamzer is. Therefore, they're well identified. When someone comes and makes an accusation about this individual, he's a mamzer, he doesn't fight it because he knows people won't think he's really a mamzer because he wasn't on the ID list before. He wasn't on the mamzer list. If he's not on the mamzer list, then nobody's just going to believe someone coming out of the blue and calling him a mamzer. So therefore he says, you know what, it's not worth fighting it because nobody's going to believe this guy anyway. I wasn't known to be a mamzer beforehand. Aval mamzer vitzoveach, halal vishotek, pasul. But in the case of mamzer vitzoveach, a mamzer that's screaming no, 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 or halal vishotek, a halal that is silent, there he is, pasul. Now the mamzer tzoveach is again where a case where there is a call that he is a mamzer. Now, even if he comes back and he screams about it, we're not going to care because there's already a kol that's out there that this guy was a mamzer. So for him to come now and try to deny it or try to say no, that's not going to be able to overcome the problem that he was already identified as a mamzer, and therefore it's not going to overcome it. Now, halal v'shotek is pasul. Why over here, according to the Rabbi Shimon Lazar, by halal and shotek is he pasul? By the ishtik savar mistaye de lo mafkele mikal. He says, similar to the previous answer, but with a nuanced approach. Says, look, it's good enough that they kept me in the cow. The reason that he's silent over here is because he knows it's true. And he says, listen, they could have called me something much worse, which is a mamzer. The fact that they didn't call me a mamzer, I'm just going to keep quiet and accept whatever they said as a halal. Now there, his silence is acquiescence because he says, look, it could have been much worse. The reason he agrees to it is because it is true. He says, look, if I try to fight it, they might start digging around and find something much worse. And then I'm going to be in big trouble. Here, at least I can get to be a halal. Okay, I'll live with being a halal. So as opposed to before where he said the silence, the reason he didn't fight it was because it just wasn't worth his time to fight it. Over here he says the reason he doesn't fight it is because he's in a better situation than if they find out more information or if something is much worse that could happen. So he says, I'll just take what I am and leave it at that. So therefore over here he'll be a puzzle. Now Tosva asks, why do you have to come up with this answer, Mistai Milto? Just say, Shtika Kehoda. And Shtika Kehoda over here, that's why we're going to say he is puzzle by the case of Halal. So what Tosfot says is that the Mistai Milto is a reason why he should be believed. He's going to say, you know what? The guy here is trying to be posel me mikuna, but not minakau. So that's good that he make me from the cow. Nobody's going to believe him about the halal. And that's what he says, Mistai Milto. He says, if I just keep quiet, the thing will pass over and nobody will believe him at all. So we would have thought over there, the shtika is not enough in terms of shtika gehoda'a, because the shtika is really just a response to hoping the whole thing blows over. But what the answer is in the end is Mistai Milto. The answer in the end is why is he not believed over here? Because he says, look, I'm better off just letting it go like this where I'm only Pasul de Kuna and I'm not Pasul de Kao. And therefore, that's why we say over here that his shtika is problematic, is because his shtika is basically a partial acceptance of the accusation that is being brought against him. That he's saying, look, if I just keep quiet, the whole thing will blow over. He says, at this point, I just am out of the Kuna stack. I can at least marry into the Kao. And if I just remain quiet, this whole thing's going to blow over because people don't remember about Chalalim. They only remember about Mamzerim. And that's the reason over here that we say that the accusations are believed to be true. It's not because of his silence being a Hoda'ah, but rather his silence playing into what he knows is the nature of people, to forget about Chalalim and not about Mamzerim. And therefore, we say that his silence over here is problematic and basically admits to the fact that he is a Chalal. Tani Chado, Rabbi Yossi Omer, Shtok Mamzer Kasher, Shtok Halal Pasul. We have one brayta that says, Rabbi Yossi says that when you're silent by a mamzer, you're kasher. Shtok halal, pasul. When you're silent by a halal, you're pasul. Betani idoch. And we have another brayta that says, shtok halal kasher. Shtok mamzer, pasul. Just the opposite. Lo kashel. That's not a problem. Ha'atanakama libid Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Yossi Shimon Elazar libid Rabbi Meir. These are the two positions of Rabbi Meir, depending if it's the Tanakama or Rabbi Shimon Elazar. The case that says that silence by a halal is pasul and silence by a mamzer is kasher, that's Rabbi Shimon Elazar according to Rabbi Meir. The opposite way around, where silence by a mamzer is pasul and silence by a halal is kasher, that's the Tanakama telling you Rabbi Meir's position. So those two versions of Rabbi Meir's position manifest in Rabbi Yossi in the Braita. Rabbi Yossi has these two opinions. One is similar to Rabbi Meir according to the Tanakama, and one is like Rabbi Meir according to Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar. Now we'll start the Mishnah, and then tomorrow we'll continue with the Gemara. The Gemara is a very fundamental Gemara that's quoted all over Shas. It deals with Rove, and when Rove dictates, and what type of Rove you need to make a woman Kshera. So it's a very important Gemara that any Sugya that deals with the Kashrut of a woman always quotes this Sugya because of the qualifiers that are placed on here. So the Mishnah says, I'm Rabbi Yossi, maseh b'tinoket she'arda l'malot mayim min ha'ayin. What's the case here where a young girl was going down to draw water from the mayan, from the spring? Happens to be that was the common practice in their day. The women were burdened with bringing the water back. It was a backbreaking work. We know that from Rivka, she was also going to the well to bring the water back. But we also know in Yerushalayim, when we talk about Chizkiyahu's tunnels and the staircase, if you go there to visit, there's a tremendous staircase that goes down to the water thing that was used to feed Ir David, and the women used to go, the young girls used to go down there to carry the water up. And if you walk those stairs, you'll know, it's not simple stairs, it's slippery, it was not an easy situation. But that was the task of the young girls, to go and to bring the water. But unfortunately, a terrible incident, Venensa, that she was raped in that situation. If the situation is that the majority of the people in the city are Kshirim the Kuna, or Zutina say the Kuna, then she is not Psula the Kuna, because we can assume that the party that raped her was someone from the city. Since it was someone from the city, let's assume that the Rove of the city is Kshira, therefore it'll dictate what the status of this woman is. Amalei Rove of the Rav Nachman, Rav Yochanan ben Nuri damar keman. Who does Rav Yochanan ben Nuri's position follow? We've had a Tanaim till now who tell us what the status of women is. Who does he follow? Iked Rabban Gamliel, afilu Rove Sulim nami mechasher. Wait a minute. Rabbi Gamliel said when there were Rove Sulim, he was also Makshir. That was Rabbi Shul ben Levi's statement earlier. Rabbi Gamliel says Ne'emenet. Says Ne'emenet even the Rove Sulim. Rove Sherim or Rove Sulim. She is Ne'emenet. Ika Rabbi Yeshua. If it's like Rabbi Yeshua, afilu Rove Sherim. Rabbi Yeshua said ain't a Ne'emenet whether it was Rove Sherim or Rove Sulim. Rove Sherim nami posil. So over here, what does Rove matter? Over here at all. Either she is Ne'emenet or not Ne'emenet. We're going to leave the question open, because the answer to this question is really complex, and the complexity of the answer really dictates everything we know about kashrut of women in these situations. Tosafot does point out here that it's not so simple that when we say Rabbi Gamliel says Ne'emenet, the Rove Psulim, because as we pointed out before, Rabbi Gamliel is only machshir in the face of Rove Psulim when number one, there's a Tanat Bari, and number two is that there's a Migo. Or if there's no Migo, there's at least a Cheskat Kashrut of the woman, or that we can say that she is bodeket u'mizaneh. But over here, you clearly can't invoke bodeket u'mizaneh because she was raped. It wasn't consensual over here. And so it clearly wasn't bodeket. And over here, she doesn't even have tanat bari because she has no idea who the assailant was. So the only thing you have possibly left is a case of migo. But it could only be a case of migo if we didn't know she was raped. Because if we didn't know she was raped, then she can have a migo that she could say she was a mukateitz and she wasn't raped. But if we know about the rape, then she doesn't have that ability anymore. So then, you have a problem here, because how could it be that the Gemara is trying to say that Rabbi Gamliel would say, even in this case, that Rove Psulim would be kasher? So in the end, Tosafot says that the case here in the Mishnah must be a case where either she's making a Tanat Bari and she knows the assailant, or it's a case where we didn't know she was raped and she's bringing us the information, therefore there's a Migal. And in that case, then Rabbi Gamliel would be Makshir Avil Barove Psulim. The Tosafot says we have to set it up this way, because otherwise you're going to get into a lot of problems in terms of Piskei Halacha, because we're going to pass like this Mishnah like Rabbi Yossi, and before we had the Psak Halacha like Rabbi Gamliel, and if you want to be able to reconcile the two of them, it has to be a case where Rabbi Gamliel would agree that she is Ne'emenet, and therefore Tosafot says the case here must be a case where Rabbi Gamliel would agree, even Barob Sulim, that she would be Ksheira. And therefore, we have to set it up as a case of either Miguel, what we didn't know, that she was raped and she's telling us the information, or she knew the assailant and therefore she's making a bari claim. Okay, we're going to stop over here on the last line on Yudalid Amud Bet.